views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right. Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
And it is a great day today on Straight Talk Radio. I am so excited. It's been a, boy, it's been a hectic day today. I was a guest on a show today, and then we're doing a show today. So it's kind of a twofer, so to speak. And it's been a lot of fun. There's a certain excitement in the air as we move into thinking about some of the topics that we need to talk about today. And of course, if you look in the news, it isn't as if we don't have plenty of things to have straight talk about. But, you know, I want to go backwards just a little bit to set up this show. Sometime back, and I want to say it probably now was maybe 3-4 years ago, could be 5, but I got a call from a lady up in New York City who was connected with a show called Currents TV. I believe it was sponsored by the Catholic Diocese, if I remember correctly. And she said, we're putting together this segment on ethics. And we think it would be interesting to have some ethics professionals around the country as guests. Would you be willing to participate? And I said, sure. And they said, in addition to you, we've asked Lauren Bloom. And I was sitting there like, sweet. I was so excited because it's kind of funny in the world of speaking about ethics and talking about it, in which, of course, most people think that has to be incredibly boring. But we tend to find each other following each other. And I was following Lauren's career, young radio person, I can't even talk, but following Lauren's career in that she speaks of ethics, and even her website says practical ethical solutions. And so it was really kind of cool because the first time we actually got to meet was there in New York. And Lauren, I don't know about you, but I enjoyed that video segment and the what they produced afterward. That was a lot of fun.
Hi, Chuck. So did I. And yes, and it was a real pleasure to meet you. I had also been following your career and was very delighted to meet you in person.
Well, it's kind of cool to have the opportunity to do that. And one of the things that really struck me is if you're in the world of speaking and communication and you're talking about issues like ethics, one of the things, and I'm sure it happens to you all the time, is people say, oh, you really must be busy because, gosh, there's a real need.
Yeah, and everybody says that, and then everyone says, not that I need it, of course.
There you go. But not that I need it, of course. And you sit back, and I don't know about you, you know, I'll be vulnerable here, but I sit back and I think to myself, okay, so let's get this. There must be this real need because people are so willing to act unethically, and yet it isn't the most common thing for people to really make an investment in acting ethically. It appears that people seem to, how do I put this? They seem to believe that, well, it could happen to other people, but it will never happen to me. And yet, the fact of the matter is any of us as human beings have the potential to make bad choices, unethical choices, and there will always be consequences.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had a very similar experience. I find people are willing to invest a whole lot of money in learning how to sell better, to present themselves better, to advance their careers, and they don't think about the proactive work of educating themselves about ethics so they stay out of trouble before it comes up.
That's the thing. That before it comes up is, well, let's put it this way. I say every choice has a consequence. Consequence doesn't always mean bad, by the way. Consequence means consequence. But the fact is, if people were to take the time and energy to invest in making positive choices, probably your acclaimed book, Art of the Apology, might not be so necessary. And yet, you've written the masterpiece on how to appropriately apologize. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Straight Talk Radio. I'm Chuck Gallagher, and my guest today is Lauren Bloom. You have heard of her. She and I have had some conversation here. Lauren is a very, very special person. If you want to find out more about Lauren, visit Lauren Bloom, L-A-U-R-E-N M Bloom, B-L-O-O-M.com. LaurenMBloom.com. And if you Google Lauren Bloom, that will be the first thing that pops up. But Lauren has written a masterful book entitled Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. So on this segment of Straight Talk Radio, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about, well, you know, what happens if you screw up. And as opposed to it having to be the worst of circumstances that takes place, when is it appropriate to issue an apology, how to do it, when to do it, why to do it, and perhaps when to accept it? So, Lauren, I am so thrilled to have you on the show. This is going to be fun.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, Chuck, and really looking forward to this segment.
We have several segments that we'll be going through, but as we start this, I have to ask you the question, what motivated you to write the book? Tell me a little bit about the background. What's the backstory to this book?
Sure. Well, in an earlier segment of my career, I was the general counsel to the actuarial profession in the U.S. And I did a lot of work with actuaries on their professional standards, their code of ethics, and also helping individual actuaries, not representing them in court so much, but helping them in situations where they'd gotten themselves in trouble, made a mistake. I mean, they made my job very easy because I could count the dishonest actuaries I've met in my career on one hand, and I don't think I could get to five.
Oh, but, wow, you're lucky.
Yeah, I really was. I mean, they are lovely people and very ethical, but even they will occasionally make mistakes.
Right.
And because these are the folks who handle the money for pension plans, for insurance companies, you know, who do all the estimates and forecast how much money is going to be needed so people can retire or get their claims paid when they have an accident or someone dies, they handle huge amounts of money. So if they make a mistake, it's going to be enormous. And what I found in working with them is that if they took the kind of traditional posture of saying, all right, I've made a mistake, my client's threatening to sue me for malpractice, I'm going to hunker down and argue, it was going to cost them a fortune. Whereas if they said, all right, I made a mistake, I am human, I acknowledge the mistake, and I'm going to work with my clients to apologize for it and make things better, ultimately it was very much to the good. And so I thought, all right, if this works for actuaries, it's going to work for other people in business. So I sat down and wrote what I thought was going to be an article about apologies in the context of business, and particularly how apologizing can be a very effective way to avoid having to undergo the stress and expense of going to court. And then I started adding to it, and then some friends suggested additional chapters, and what started out as an article quickly became a book.
Wow. All right, I have to ask this question. Lauren, you are an attorney. You're an ordained interfaith minister, obviously an award-winning author, but on the attorney side, I mean, just put the attorney hat on for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
There is this side of me that says, so if someone in business screws up in some form or fashion and they acknowledge it, admit it, and apologize for it, haven't they compromised their legal position?
You know, Chuck, that's the traditional stance that attorneys take. I mean, I understand why. I mean, we are trained from, you know, 1L, never to admit anything, never to let our clients admit anything, to fight every point. And the problem with that is if they've made a mistake, it's going to come out. And so, yes, you've maybe compromised your position in that you've made it a little bit easier for the other side to prove what happened. But what happened is what happened, whether you admit it or not. Now, as a defendant, you can spend tens or hundreds or hundreds of thousands or however many dollars on defending yourself in court. Or you can say, okay, I did do this. I acknowledge that I did it. The responsible thing is to be an adult about it, own up, admit what happened, and work with my client or my contractor or my employee or my customer to make things right. Ultimately, a lot of the time, it's going to keep you out of an expensive and difficult lawsuit. Plus, much of the time, you're going to find that that other person, whoever it may be, is going to be disinclined to sue you because they appreciate your honesty. There's a situation in my book where one of the folks I used to work with had made a mistake and as a result had kind of undervalued what a benefit was going to cost a municipal pension plan, went, admitted it. Not only did they not sue him, he has a marvelous reputation at this point. His clients trust him more because they know that when things go wrong, he'll own up. And that's the high integrity thing to do.
You know, that makes so much sense, and it's fascinating to me on the end of thinking about what's the kind of the ping pong game back and forth of what you do, and I firmly believe in transparency. I know, and most of the people who listen to the show know that I made some very terrible mistakes when I was in my 20s, which ultimately cost me my career as a CPA and also created for me the opportunity to have a stint in federal prison. Not something I'm particularly proud of, but it was a consequence. But following that, people have said in many cases, well, you know, how have you been able to recover from that? And the answer is transparency, because people do want to trust. And if you give them reason to do that, generally they will give you more opportunity than less. And I think in many cases, that's what you've just said.
Exactly. And you know, honestly, my profession has gotten itself in trouble collectively for getting too cute and too clever. You know, there's a reason why the legal profession doesn't have a great reputation. And I think a lot of that is because people perceive lawyers as being willing to tell any story, as long as their clients are paying them well enough for it. Now, we have a code of ethics, too. I realize not everybody recognizes that, but we do. But ultimately, the truth is going to be the truth. And for all that you can wiggle around and try to pretend otherwise, you've done what you've done. So transparency and accountability ultimately serve you better than a whole lot of pretending that you're better than you are. I mean, how many times have we heard it's not the mistake, it's the cover-up?
Right. Absolutely. It's so amazing to see what happens when people go out in the workplace or wherever it happens to be, make a mistake, spend all this time and energy in the cover up to keep it from coming to light, which inevitably it does come to light. And then the whole issue becomes the issue of the cover up. And not about the mistake. When you sit back and you think of Martha Stewart, she didn't go to prison for insider trading, although that's what the initial issue was. She went to prison for lying. And that was where the cover-up issue came from.
Well, and it comes up in so many contexts. I mean, the classic one, of course, is Richard Nixon with Watergate. It wasn't the crime, although heaven knows that was a bad thing, but it was the cover-up. His sitting there saying, I am not a crook, when his people had broken into a hotel room and stolen information, apparently under his instruction. That's a pretty good definition of crook as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. And listen, I got to tell you a little side story. When I was a kid, I mean, pretty young, you know, when Nixon ran the first time, no problem. So the second go-round, before Watergate ever came out, he had this advertisement, Nixon now more than ever. And he wanted people to contribute to, you know, for his reelection campaign. As a 12-year-old, I went around collecting money in a little jar for Nixon. And I collected $10, and I did my patriotic duty. Oh, my gosh. You know, collected $10, got a cashier's check, sent it. When I was 18, I went to the bank to buy my first car. And in those days, it wasn't credit score. It was your character that was the deciding factor for a loan. Mm-hmm. And the banker came up, put his arm around me, and he said to me, after he'd approved the loan for my car, he said, did you collect money for Nixon? And, Lauren, I could have just slid under the desk. And I said, yes, sir, I did. You know, thinking, oh, this is not going to be pretty. And then he says to me, he never cashed the check. And we've had this on our books for about 8 years now, and we really need to get it off the books. Can we just give you the $10 so we don't have this outstanding check that's been out there for 10 years? And I'm sitting there thinking,
funny.
Yeah, the check was probably in G. Gordon Liddy's briefcase, deep six in the Potomac somewhere, and I'm part of history and didn't realize it. And before we go any further, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. I hear the music saying it's time for a break. My guest is Lauren Bloom. She is absolutely a wonderful ethicist and author of Art of the Apology. And if you go to Amazon.com and search Art of the Apology, it is certainly the first book to pop up. Wonderful reviews. We'll be right back after these messages. Well, this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and oh, I am so excited. This segment, this show, is about the apology. And the book is Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. The author is Lauren Bloom. She is an attorney and just a delight. Lauren and I had the opportunity to meet, I don't know, I can't remember exactly, probably 5 years ago, 4 years ago, up in New York City.
That's about right.
Yeah, for a show that was on ethics, and it's been fun watching her career ever since, and the places that she goes, and the organizations that she speaks to, and we got to talking in the first segment about this concept of people say to those of us that deal in the world of ethics, well, gosh, you must be busy. Let me say this: enough companies don't put their money where their mouth is to really focus on making the right first choice. And so if you're an organization out there and you're thinking to yourself, you know, well, yes, we want to be ethical. I want to encourage you. Go to Lauren's website. It's laurenmbloom.com. If you just Google Lauren Bloom, it'll be the first thing that pops up. She is a masterful presenter and absolutely somebody that your organization would love to hear from, especially if you think about this whole concept of the art of the apology. And Lauren, I want to take a current topic to play with just a little bit. I mean, obviously, it's been all over the news, so let's play it out. Donald Sterling, Los Angeles Clippers, gets ticked off with his girlfriend, or I guess it was his girlfriend.
Let's call her his friend. It's never been proven.
Okay. Very good. The attorney comes out to make sure that the facts are clear. So he was talking with his friend, may not be a friend now, but was talking with his friend, a little upset. She takes her cell phone or some recording device, I'm going to assume it was a smartphone, records the conversation, and somehow somebody gets hold of the conversation, leaks it to the media in some form or fashion, and they play his ranting, which most people today would call quite racist. And obviously, it made news everywhere, to the point that the NBA commissioner, wanting to make sure that he's doing the right thing, bans him for life, fines him, it was $2.5 million, and says, you got to sell the team. And Lauren, all of that is, I'm going to call it basic in the media fact, but I wonder what would have happened if Donald Sterling had read your book and started with some humility and an apology, would the outcome have been the same?
Probably not, but I have to tell you, having watched his apology, he has earned the distinction, in my opinion, of delivering the single worst public apology I have ever seen in my career.
Okay.
Far none.
So tell me about that.
Well, he went on Anderson Cooper's show. And honestly, I cannot imagine who told him this would be a good idea. I've wondered about it. I can't come up with anyone who would have thought so, because the first element of any apology is being sincerely sorry for something. And he didn't seem to me to be sorry for anything. He went on Anderson Cooper, and honestly, all Cooper did was sit there and smile. I mean, he asked a question or two, but basically, just let Mr. Sterling ramble. And ramble he did. And very quickly, it became apparent that he felt he'd done nothing wrong. I don't know what in heaven's name he thinks Magic Johnson ever did to him, but it must have been pretty bad. Went off on him again. Said a variety of other offensive things. And just made it very clear that he was there for some reason, but it certainly wasn't to say that he was sorry, because he wasn't sorry at all. I have even wondered if the franchise attorneys sort of hoped that he would display to the world what his attitudes really were, because honestly, he destroyed himself in terms of holding onto the team, and rightfully so. I mean, again, to just let me put myself play lawyer for a second, that franchise is a business, and it's a business with employees. The team, all of the people who work in management, the cheerleaders, everybody who makes that franchise run. And having said what he did, and then having gone on Anderson Cooper and essentially reinforced what he'd said to the world, he set up a situation where every employment decision made thereafter could be challenged on racist grounds. So I don't know how the NBA couldn't have said sell the team. I understand as of last I checked that he's planning to fight it. I don't see how he can. I mean, during his appearance on Anderson Cooper, I thought the smartest thing he said was when he said, there isn't going to be a lawsuit, it wouldn't benefit anyone. And I'm very sorry to see that he's apparently changed his mind.
Yeah, I have to tell you, you know, obviously the concept of this show is straight talk, and the straight side of that is, it's mind-boggling. Number one, you're right, he really wasn't sorry. And, you know, let me just kind of go down a little rabbit trail for a second. One of the things that I find really fascinating is often you said earlier in the first segment, you said the truth will always come out. Even people who have a contrived apology, generally given enough rope, will truly show their colors. And, you know, it was probably brilliant on Anderson Cooper's part just to keep his mouth shut and let him hang himself with the rope that he was just kindly giving him by keeping quiet.
Well, it was if his goal was to allow the world to see Donald Sterling express himself without any shame, yeah, it probably was. I found it hard to watch. I don't like to see anyone embarrass themselves to that level, and whether he knew it or not, he embarrassed himself very badly. I find his views offensive. I was sad for him. I feel very sorry for anyone who has to work for him. But yeah, usually if someone is making a public apology, give them enough rope, as you say, and they will reveal their true colors, if you don't mind my mixing my metaphors a little bit.
I'm thinking, for instance, of
Tony Hayward, who was formerly the CEO of BP, and that was an interesting situation, because there you had a company that admitted to liability for the oil spill that happened, which is unusual. I mean, they were out there saying, we take responsibility, we did this, we will make it right, and yet it took them weeks to say, and oh, by the way, we're sorry. Not typically what happens, because usually if a corporate representative doesn't say those words, it's because the lawyers have told them not to. So I'll admit I was scratching my head over that one. But you may remember Hayward in the press saying repeatedly, we're going to make it right, we are responsible for this, and then saying, and oh, by the way, I'd like my life back, which is why he is no longer the CEO of BP.
Right. It is a fascinating thing to see, and I know your book obviously can use and does quite effectively some great examples, especially in the public arena, because it's something that people can kind of latch on to. And there are a lot of circumstances. You know, you take Donald Sterling, and he showed his true colors. It is, by the way, just to kind of wrap that part of it up, you know, something that causes me to scratch my head because fundamentally, unless something has changed that I'm unaware of, he's been declared incompetent. His wife has sold the team and she has indemnified the NBA for his suit. So if he sues and happens to win, she's going to give money that otherwise could have been his to the NBA to indemnify him. And it's like, what idiot would fight a battle that ultimately they're going to pay the consequences of either way? The only winners in that would be attorneys, it appears to me.
Well, and I have to say, litigation is a rotten way to solve problems. It is a very expensive aspect of life in the United States. We're the most litigious society on earth. And the average American family of four pays thousands of dollars every year into legal fees that are baked into the price of the products and services that we buy.
Sure.
But the Sterling situation in particular is the perfect example of how nobody wins when a situation is allowed to devolve into these kinds of he said, she said, cross-complaint lawsuits. They don't serve anyone except the lawyers. And frankly, they're stressful even for them. Yes, they make money, but they do it at one heck of a price.
Yeah. Now, Lauren, let's switch to a different example, and I'm not sure how much time we have in this segment. We'll hear some music in a bit, and when we do, we might have to break this up. But let's take Pete Rose. Different issue a long time ago, and you know now he's kind of making the news again, and it was interesting to me. I was out in Las Vegas, which, by the way, happens to be where he lives. I didn't know that until a day or so ago. But I was out in Las Vegas for a convention, and Pete Rose happened to be there, and he was signing autographs. And there were a fair number of people at the convention getting the Pete Rose autographed, although I have to say he looked miserable doing it. But there happened to be a sports store there in the Vegas market, and I happened to be walking by the sports store because, of course, Vegas has all these stores attached to casinos and hotels and so forth. And here's Pete Rose, and there was nobody in line. Nobody wanting his autograph. He was just sitting there waiting for someone to want the Pete Rose autograph. But it appears today in the news that Pete Rose is saying, look, you know, I didn't bet on baseball when I played. I did when I was a manager, but surely there is a time for a second chance. And of course, that's the title of my first book, Second Chances, and I hear music. So this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. We'll be back after this break with Lauren Bloom, author of Art of the Apology, and we're talking about some contemporary issues, and we'll get Lauren's take on should Pete Rose be able to apologize and perhaps be reconsidered for the Hall of Fame, or are consequences in some cases permanent because the action is just so egregious? This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. Stick with me. And we'll be back in just a minute. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And so let's assume for a moment, as you listen to this show, you screwed up. You did something wrong. You're not particularly proud of it. Perhaps it is not widely known. I don't know what the circumstance would be, but I will tell you there is one book that you should read. It's called Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. And I know, as do many of the people who are listening to the show, I have made my share of mistakes and circumstances under which an apology was appropriate and for which one was given. And I have found that transparency, responsibility, and truthfulness absolutely does pay off, although it will not always eliminate the consequence of the choices that we might make. Before we went to break, Lauren and I were talking about Donald Sterling and his fiasco, and we kind of were just getting ready to talk a little bit about Pete Rose, who, of course, many years ago as manager, bet on baseball and was banned. And, of course, did not give him the opportunity to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And now he has some 25 or so years later said, gosh, boy, you know, there ought to be some period of time under which I might be entitled for a second chance or at least to be voted on the merits of my play as a player, not on the choices I made as a manager. My guest is Lauren Bloom. Lauren, what do you think about that?
You know, I'm aware of the story, and I think he makes a reasonable point, but hear me out. My concern about this is that it's coming from him and not from other people. And I think one of the consequences of making a mistake is that to some degree, you kind of have to accept the consequences until other people start saying they think you're okay. Now, one of the things I've noticed about Pete Rose is, according to news reports, he's spending 20 days a month, so basically 5 days a week, 4.5 hours a day, sitting in a store in Las Vegas signing autographs.
Right.
And the items in question that he's signing cost anywhere from $80 to $800. Okay. What if instead he was spending that time out in the community giving back? I mention this because I think there's a parallel here to some degree to Michael Vick, who, of course, was stripped of everything because of his dogfighting. The difference is Vic went, and as part of his apology to the community and to his sport, he really has gone out of his way to make amends for what he did. And he has, in fact, been working in the community with kids, explaining why dogfighting is vicious and dangerous, why it's wrong, why he regrets what he did. In other words, he has taken what he has done and has tried to turn around and teach somebody else to do better. And in fact, if you're curious about it, Wayne Pacelle, who's the CEO of the Humane Society, has written a wonderful book called The Bond about our kinship with animals and how we take care of them. And in that, among other things, he talks about the Humane Society's decision to partner with Michael Vick, which was not an easy one for them to make. But that's a situation where I think he has really taken it, he has turned it around, and has earned his way back into society and into public respect. I think Pete Rose can say he would like a second chance. I'd like to see him get it, but I think he's more likely to get it and more likely to regain the respect of fans if he goes out and does something for the community as a way of making amends for what he did.
You know, Lauren, I have to say, being someone that has made some fairly significant mistakes in life, I do agree with what you're saying. And there is a very, very clear distinction between Pete Rose, and I have nothing against the man. Seems like wasn't enough fella. But you take Pete Rose, who is signing autographs and looking at, you know, here's my record and, you know, gosh, you'd want my autograph and I can make some money doing this, versus making that energetic commitment to do something to help people see the significance of not betting. I do find it, this is probably a little scattered, I just find it kind of strange that Pete Rose is signing, you know, baseballs or whatever it happens to be, baseball cards or posters in my particular case is what I saw, but is signing them in Las Vegas. I mean, it's like, you know, this is something that to me is strange about
that.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that. I'd rather see him working with the Make-A-Wish Foundation or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, you make a real good point, and I think the reason the idea of his coming back is less appealing than it might be is part of why you make amends is you're demonstrating to the world that you get it, that you understand that you made a mistake and that you really wanted to do something to make it right, not just to continue to put money in your pocket.
Right.
And I think it's important to draw the distinction between being forgiven for what he did, which happened a long time ago, and being allowed to, you know, go out there, make a living, support himself or what have you, and being a sports hero. To me, being inducted into the Hall of Fame says you're a hero. Signing baseballs in Vegas is not something a hero necessarily does. And I think he's asking for the privilege of fame and admiration without necessarily having demonstrated that he understands what he did wrong and finding a way to earn that back.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with you. And you made a comment, and I don't remember exactly what your terminology was just a second ago, but I want to kind of morph it into a question. And that is, so this wonderful book, Art of the Apology, I have found in my personal experience that it is certainly possible for someone to be forgiven for really bad choices. I have also found It is not likely that those choices, however, will be forgotten. And I'm just curious if you have a feel for what would one expect when apologizing? Do you expect forgiveness and forgetfulness, or what?
Well, it probably depends on the circumstances. And I think it also depends on who you are, what you're forgiven, asking to be forgiven for, and how, frankly, how much people like and admire you otherwise. I think of Hugh Grant, for instance, who, you know, the charming sort of boyish dithery actor from England who embarrassed himself with a prostitute in an alley. And he went on Letterman. You know, first he issued an apology. Then he went away for a while, which, of course, is part of this. Then he went on Letterman late night and sat there and was just charming all over the couch. And was very straightforward about having been an idiot, not knowing what he was doing, desperately embarrassed, so ashamed, so sorry. And by the time he was done, we were all ready to say, Hugh, what's your next movie? Now, I will say, I don't think his career has ever fully recovered.
Right.
So I think when you ask forgetfulness, well, it takes a long time. If you Google Kathy Lee Gifford, one of the first things you're going to find are the allegations about child abuse in the factories that were producing products for her years ago, and it's been a long time since that.
Right.
You know, I think part of making a mistake and apologizing for it is recognizing that you're going to have to live with what you've done. I think as a society, we have the right to say, we forgive you for it, and we, you know, we'll take you back to whatever degree. But expecting people just to forget that things happened probably was never realistic, and frankly, in the internet age, isn't at all. Things just follow us, and I'm afraid part of growing up is recognizing that you carry your stuff your whole life.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and I know in my case, when I have the opportunity to speak with young people in high schools, and especially in the college setting, you know, one of the things we talk about ethical behavior. And of course I ask him, do you have a Facebook page? And everybody does, of course. And then I ask the question, well, is it ethical for me as a 50 some year old who might be hiring people? Is it ethical for me to look at your Facebook page to make a determination? And most of them actually say, no, they don't think it is. But the reality of it is what you just said is correct. What you put out in the world will follow you, and it's sticky. It doesn't go away.
It is. And this is something I talk with my own daughter about, who you met my daughter. She's now 11. You didn't recognize her. But she's now getting to that age of online presence. And we're having to have the conversations about, you know, who you do and don't friend and what pictures you put up and which ones you don't. I think the internet is in many ways very dangerous for young people because they don't recognize that everything that goes up is there forever. But in terms of the ethics of the employer looking, that's public information. And if I can find it online as an employer, I don't think there's anything unethical about me looking. Having said that, I think it's probably wise for the employer to say, all right, the kid was 17 when this went up. I don't think we've yet gotten to where we necessarily have reasonable perspective on things, particularly things that are online. And I will say, Americans can be very punishing. You know, I was very struck, for instance, I happened to be in Europe when the Monica Lewinsky story broke. And, of course, the United States was just up in arms about what had happened in the White House. And the folks in the B&Bs around me were very surprised that the Americans were so upset about a politician, as they put it, getting a little bit on the side. But we're an idealistic culture. We want our people to be, and particularly our public figures, our leaders, our captains of industry, our politicians, to be really, really good people. Now, I don't think it's fair to hold, let's say, sports figures, for instance, to the be a role model for small children thing necessarily. I don't know that all CEOs necessarily have to be role models for small children, although I would hope the CEO of a company like Disney would be, for instance.
Well,
but when you start talking politicians, when you start talking about community leaders, you know, people who basically stand up to tell the rest of us how to live, they'd better be prepared to behave in a very ethical way.
Well, that's a true statement. And this is Chuck Gallagher. This is Straight Talk Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. And my guest is Lauren Bloom. And boy, it has been a fun conversation and is going so fast. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for our last segment to talk more about Art of the Apology. This is Chuck Gallagher. Stick with us. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, and we have been talking with Lauren Bloom, author of Art of the Apology, How, When, and Why to Give and Accept Apologies. This has been a fun interview and a fun conversation, and Lauren, I am so appreciative that you're taking the time to join me here. Let me say this to our audience. I know that a lot of people who will be listening to this across the country realize that I speak on ethics, and you need to know Lauren Bloom speaks on ethics and, in fact, is a marvelous presenter. She and I had the opportunity to meet each other for the first time in person up in a video shoot up in New York City, and it was a fun experience then, and I have followed her career for a number of years. And I was talking with Bruce Weinstein the other day. He is the ethics guy, and the conversation kind of went like this. Bruce says, I'm either following you or you're following me, and we're following Lauren. And so if your organization is committed to a culture of ethical action, you need to go to Lauren's website. It is laurenmbloom.com. If you Google Lauren Bloom, you will absolutely see her website. She is a marvelous presenter, and I highly recommend considering her. Talk to her, reach out. Of course, you can find her on Google+, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and her website will give you all of the contact information that you need. We've been talking about this whole concept of apologizing, and we've been using public figures. And Lauren, I want to go in two different directions, but the first one, because where we left, you were talking about people who were in public life. And I'm mystified by this concept. In the state of South Carolina, we had our former governor, Mark Sanford. That was the guy that went ostensibly to the Appalachian Trail and ended up in Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
You remember him. In the North Carolina, we had John Edwards, who before his fall from grace, many people said was the rising young Democratic senator, good-looking, charisma, could be president, another John F. Kennedy type who has just fallen from grace. And of course, the last one, which I still see raising his head, and I can't imagine how he could, is Anthony Weiner. And I'm wondering, if you ask those guys 10 years ago, if you went back 10 years, a decade, and said, guys, would you do something that would destroy your political career? I think you and I both would say, they would say, no, not a chance. And yet they did. So maybe this ties into ethics. Maybe it ties into choices and consequences. And certainly there's the potential for it to tie into Art of the Apology. What do you think motivates some people that have such a potential for success to just fall off a wagon?
Well, I think there are an awful lot of temptations for people in public life. I've worked in Washington, D.C. And sort of observed the local flora and fauna, if you like, enough to know that, you know, politicians have groupies throw themselves at them. And while sports stars and actors and singers get that, somehow we're more tolerant of that than we are with our politicians. You know, I think there's a general expectation that politicians will behave themselves. And probably a lot of the time they say no 99 times, and then they say the one time they say yes. And I think they don't think they're going to get caught. And I think they don't think that people will fail to forgive them when they do get caught. But as we've discussed, the truth comes out. And I think politicians need to recognize that if they want that power and influence, they've got to pay the price of behaving themselves. Nothing keeps them from going back to a lucrative law practice, but if they want to be out there writing laws the rest of us have to follow, they need to recognize that that's one of those things that's not going to happen when they have that fall from grace. Because there are always other people to elect.
You know, that's a very powerful thing. There are always other people to elect. And you are right. And I will say from personal experience, if you make a bad choice and nothing immediately happens, it is very easy for your need combined with the opportunity that you take to be rationalized into believing it won't ever be caught, or at some point you can even rationalize that wrong is right. That's not a good thing. I'm not suggesting that it's a positive thing by any stretch of the imagination, but it is part of human nature, maybe not of everybody, but certainly of enough people that we can see on a daily basis examples of people who should read your book. But let's do this. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and let me just throw on the minister hat for a second. We're none of us perfect. We all make mistakes. And I am a great believer in forgiveness. I'm a great believer in reconciliation. That's another reason I wrote the book, is to make it easier for people to get to that space. At the same time, just because you forgive someone doesn't mean you put them right back where they were before they crossed the line.
Well, that's a true statement. You know, I have found in my personal life, to be very candid with folks that are listening, I have never been put back to where I was before. I will never be a CPA again. I know that. I will always be a convicted felon unless the President of the United States decides to pardon me. And even at that, I'm still acknowledged of having committed the crime. I'm just also would, in that circumstance, be acknowledged as having been forgiven by the president. But it doesn't wipe away the fact that the crime was committed in the first place. So you can't wipe away the past. What we do, the choices we make, stick with us. And I think you said that. But I have also found, and I think it's certainly true through your book, that if you make the appropriate apology that is heartfelt and change your choices and change your actions, it certainly can be quite empowering to people in their lives. Let me ask you a question, Lauren. In this book, let's get away from all of the public side of it and go to the personal side. So let's talk about individual choices and apologies. Talk to us a little bit about, okay, so a spouse cheats on another. Talk about the apology.
Oh, that's tough. You know, you probably hit on the single toughest situation when you're dealing in a personal relationship, because the breach of trust is just profound. There are basically six elements to an effective apology in any setting. For one thing, you have to say you're sorry. And it all starts with sincerity. I'm sorry is the only thing that's going to work there. No shilly-shallying, no gamesmanship with words. Then I should not have done this, and I am responsible for hurting you. Taking responsibility for what you've done, acknowledging it, not playing games, certainly not blaming the other spouse or trying to justify it. Making amends, which is going to be tough here. And I think in a situation like that, it's a matter of, if your spouse is willing to continue the conversation, being willing to do pretty much whatever it takes to make things right as far as your spouse is concerned. Listening, always important to let the other person have their say about what you did and how you upset them. Again, this is really going to be painful, especially in a situation like that. But letting your spouse tell you as often and as harshly as necessary how hurt and angry they are is going to be part of it. Expressing appreciation to your spouse for not only the years together, not only the marriage, but also whatever forgiveness and understanding they're willing to extend. I think this piece is really important, and it's something that a lot of people forget when they apologize. You need to tell the other person why you value them, why you appreciate them, why they're important to you. And then, for heaven's sakes, doing better next time. You may be able to weather one situation like that. I doubt very much whether most couples are going to be able to weather two.
It's profound, and I hear the music, and I will say this before we've completely run out of time. In my case, I made some very terrible mistakes. And Lauren, you were talking about this idea of trust. And I have clearly found in my life, when you break trust, I might be forgiven, it won't be forgotten. And oftentimes that breaking of trust can never be rebuilt. The apology was one thing, the marriage did not survive. But my second marriage is based on trust. And boy, if there is something that I've learned, it's transparency and trust is the thing that will make the marriage survive and do well. My guest has been Lauren Bloom. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. And look, I want to say this as we wrap things up. Go to Lauren's website, Google Lauren Bloom, or go to laurenmbloom.com. And she has a wonderful website, contact information there. There's some really cool questions on her site. But click on the tab, Speaking Services. She has got some great programs. I particularly like the one Integrity 101, What Every Business Person Should Know. Lauren, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the program with me. It has certainly been a joy and a pleasure on our ends. Thank you so much.
Chuck, it's been a delight. Thank you very much for having me.
Appreciate it. Next week, tune in. And here on Transformation Talk Radio, we will be back with Straight Talk and continue the conversation about things that are important to you in ways that can transform your life. This is Chuck Gallagher. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Tune in each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com each Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, as Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. Visit ChuckGallagher.com for more information and turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher.